You are listening to the Mapping Prevention podcast series produced by the National Sexual Violence Resource Center. The NSVRC serves as the nation's principal information and resource center regarding all aspects of sexual violence. In this podcast, we talk with Renee Gillespie about strategies for building prevention capacity within organizations.
Thank you so much for sitting down and talking with me today. Do you mind just introducing yourself?
Sure. My name is Renee Gillespie. I am the Manager of Education and Training at the Houston Area Women's Center. We are a dual service domestic violence, sexual violence agency in Houston, Texas, where we run the gamut from intervention, risk reduction, primary prevention. We're kind of the one-stop shop, if you will, in prevention and intervention in Houston.
That's great. Well, we're really interested in the work that you're doing around prevention and wondered if you could share with us what you're doing as an organization to build the prevention leadership capacity.
Great question. I think for me, and when it comes to my organization and prevention becoming part of our culture and all of us really being on board, not just in understanding, but in practice, that it really starts, I think, from top down. I mean, we still are in a hierarchy here, so it helps to have strong leadership supporting the prevention movement. And not just supporting in kind of the tacit, great job, keep doing the great work, but really investing and taking the time to have prevention be a part of the culture. And what I mean by that are those theories of prevention of smushing the power structure, creating equitable work environments, creating liberated spaces where people feel safe enough to be themselves, to do the best thinking they can do. That has to be modeled on every level. It can't just be the prevention workers in their sacred space doing this kind of dialogue, but it needs to be an organizational dialogue on every level of leadership, talking about what does that look like for your particular agency. And I think the Women's Center has done a great job of that, that we have created spaces for executive leadership, mid-managers, and then up to the manager's own discretion, right, with your own staff to have those conversations and really dialogue about it. But another great thing that we've done is created our HAWC happy hours, which is a space where we can all share our feministy thoughts around oppression and privilege and media and sexuality in a space with your peers and colleagues so that it helps elevate the work that we're already doing.
Can you share how you've organized these HAWC happy hours?
How
does that come about?
It came from a brave conversation. of 10 seconds of courage, and that really is my mantra, like, you just need 10 seconds of courage. And I talked with my manager, and she was like, sure, pitch it to the CEO. So I did. And she supported it, sent out the first mass email saying, this is what it's about, this is what we're doing, come and join us. And we've had great turnout ever since. And I think part of why they're fun and exciting is that, one, you get to step away from work and talk about the issues that impact your work, which often for us grant-funded agencies, we are not paid to have those conversations, so we actually have to make time to have those conversations. But two, most of us do this work not for a job, but because we're personally connected to the movement. And to tap into that passion and that energy and excitement is a nice refueling to continue doing the work that we do. And so we've had conversations ranging from media analysis to then moving into political activism. We've done conversations strictly on analyzing and looking at people's art, survivors' art, and having conversations around that to our latest one, which is feminist speed dating and giving us a chance as an organization to talk about feminism as it directly impacts the work that we're doing. And the different type of work that we're doing, that one isn't more important than the other, but in the spectrum of feminism, you need all of them to keep the movement moving. Mm-hmm. So it's been a really fun opportunity to bring prevention home.
Are there specific tools that are your go-to tools that you're using as you're trying to support the organizational development here?
Yes. Every master's book I read is now being used here. I do have a couple go-to that I think are great to sparking the conversation around prevention and helping prevention workers, and I mean the frontline workers doing prevention, understand the difference between prevention and risk reduction. And those two books are Transforming a Rape Culture and Yes Means Yes. I think if you can sit down and dialogue with your staff and pull those articles apart and have them identify who in each book is primary prevention, who's risk reduction, who's more policy change, and start to see, one, how they connect, but two, how they are fundamentally different, is a really great exercise for frontline staff so that when you're creating or evaluating or reformatting curriculums, you too can then identify what's risk reduction, what's primary prevention, and what's more of a systematic policy change. I think that gives prevention workers confidence in what they're doing because nobody wants to be incompetent in their job. And to really be able to define that makes, I think, prevention workers feel good about yourself. Like, I know the work I'm doing and I can articulate it to others. Mm-hmm. But two, it's helpful to then be able to pitch it to the community. Because if you understand your work, then it's a real easy transition to sell the community on it because you now really understand the nitty-gritty. And when people are asking for something, you can talk about the differences, that's a great approach. But we're really addressing secondary kind of mm-hmm. intervention at that point. And then you can help them understand why true primary prevention is the way to go.
If someone were to reach out to you from another program that wanted to start building their organizational capacity around prevention work, is there like a starting place you would suggest to them? Or
so where would I start? Self-awareness and getting to know yourself, but also feeling comfortable talking about the internalized depression that you are still working through. I think for some of us doing the work, we often talk about leaving our baggage at the door and then walking into that space and meeting your clients where you are. And that still holds true with prevention. I think the difference is prevention is not just leaving maybe your survivor story at the door, but it's leaving culture at the door and really meeting people as a unique individual. And that's really hard. I mean, none of us were raised in a space where culture didn't dominate every aspect of our lives. And so to be able to turn it down in your head, or hopefully one day just push mute on that, like, ever-repeating, like, audio tape of racism, homophobia, right, sexism, like, all these things is really challenging. And that only comes from being really honest with yourself and where you are in that process of self-awareness. So that's where I would start. And don't stop. I mean, just keep doing that work forever.
What do you think are some of the critical elements that an organization needs to have in place in order to create these liberated spaces for sharing and learning?
That is a really good question. I think it takes a willingness to go through the process first and foremost, because if we are going to talk the talk in many agencies, right, in our mission, it says we're here to prevent this form of violence, then we need to be willing to walk that walk and walk it with the intent that it deserves. That if we are truly going to prevent, then we need to have an agency that's really well-versed in social justice and that we aren't just a service agency, but we are a social justice agency. That we align ourselves with others who are in similar movements. So not just the gendered violence movement, but civil rights movement, queer communities and their rights and access to, I would just say, marriage rights right now is kind of the big one that's out there. Reproductive rights is something that's similarly aligned to what we do. And to feel brave enough to step out in that way and show unity, because as a movement, I think the more we bifurcate and kind of start these separate movements, we lose the emphasis because then it's like, oh, just that group over there, or just that group over there. But when you align and it's now 75% of the population walking forward, that's a very different picture than just a single agency kind of walking in the movement. And so that takes courage to do that because not everybody supports that. I think it also needs an agency that has policies in place that create this kind of environment systematically. That liberated learning spaces and just liberated environments don't happen like haphazardly. Like you don't wake up and you're like, liberated space. Like it takes work. And I mean, it takes systematic planning as to, one, do people understand what that means? Do they know how to achieve it? But then do they have a skill set to do that type of work? And that's from upper management all the way to frontline staff. Do you have the skill set to communicate respectively? Do you have even a facility that supports that? Do you have rooms that you can use to have these kind of transformative conversations? Or do you need to go outside the agency to do that? And so I think there are some philosophical work that has to be done, but then real practical, like tangible things, like do you have space to do the work?
That's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your courage with us. We're really excited at what you're doing.
Thank you.
For more information on the National Sexual Violence Resource Center, please go to www.nsvrc.org or call toll-free at 877-739-3895. The NSVRC was founded by the Pennsylvania Coalition Against Rape and is supported in large part with funds from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Music provided by Tom Burke.